Festivals in Jacksonville get back to their roots this weekend. The festivals, yep, with an S, festivals, plural, began with classical music on the grassy knoll where Peter Britt's house once stood. Half a century later, there are rock and country and folk acts, and still 3 weekends of orchestral music on the hill. The Boss is getting ready for the season. The Boss, of course, Teddy Abrams, the Britt Orchestra music director and conductor, back in the studio with me for the first time in a couple of years. Good to see you, Teddy.
Thanks so much for having me.
Very good to have you. Talk about the pace of your own life at this moment. It's kind of like you drop into the Rogue Valley as if from being on another planet, not quite another planet, another part of the country.
That's true. Sometimes it feels kind of like that.
How much time in advance of the first concert do you arrive in the Rogue Valley to get ready?
Well, I actually make several different trips out to this area before the season starts. So usually we do a whole week of planning and then a whole week of season announcements and development. And also we've added in a pretty robust education schedule for the times that I'm here before the season starts. So I get to spend a good solid 3 weeks or so throughout the year here in this region before the season even begins. And then, of course, when I get here, it's just kind of all Brit, all orchestra, all the time. So there's not quite as much of an opportunity to get out into the community. So that's why we've thought it's really important to be here so I can know the region and know the people that ultimately become our audiences.
No, that's true. I guess you don't have a whole lot of time to be a goodwill ambassador when you're kind of cramming to get the orchestra ready for the shows.
That's right. I mean, I do my best and try and make myself available and wander around Jacksonville all day talking up the orchestra. But really, the schedule that we keep is pretty wild because we're essentially building 7 shows from scratch, really from scratch, and presenting that all in the space of 3 weeks. And if you think about most regular orchestras that play throughout the main season, they are presenting a full concert in a single week, and there may be a few weeks of break or maybe a week of doing pops or education concerts around that. So we're compressing a good half of a lot of orchestral seasons into 3 single weeks.
Is there a broad known repertoire, I mean, across the orchestral community around the country? I mean, there's certain pieces you pick out, people are going to go, oh, yeah, we play that all the time. But, I mean, it looks like you've picked some fairly ambitious stuff for the programs here, particularly the first night, the West Coast Composer Celebration.
Yeah, we have kind of prided ourselves on balancing being very ambitious and choosing pieces that people have not heard before, composers that maybe they've never encountered, especially living composers. That's been a very important part of the Brit aesthetic the last couple of years is showcasing the extraordinary talent of composers that are alive today. And also composers that are exploring musical style and genre in a creative way, not necessarily the kind of compositions or music you would expect if you just thought of boilerplate modern music. I love showcasing something that breaks down barriers or introduces people to sounds that perhaps you'd never expect to hear in an orchestral concert. And that's something that I think our audiences have grown to see, because if you have an image in your mind of an orchestra, it's a stereotypical image, it's hard to break that for a lot of people, because that's something that they've grown up with, this idea of an orchestra playing music that's old from a different continent, from a different era. And people have that in such an ingrained capacity. If you're trying to demonstrate that music is the most vital, alive language that we have, you really have to go full steam ahead. And one of the great things about it is it really knows no boundaries. So an orchestra can play things that were written yesterday, and literally right here in front of me is a score that we commissioned that has never been heard before. And we can also play music that's 500 years old, and we're doing that too.
And so the score in front of you is Unstuck, and I want to let people hear just a little. This is Andrew Norman's Unstuck, so let's hear just a chunk of this first. Looking at the score. Did you go right to the section that was just playing?
Oh, well, I actually didn't even have time to find it. This piece is pretty crazy, but it's amazing. This composer, Andrew Norman, is so brilliant. And one of the things that he does is he's able to... it's a bit of a joyously frenetic style is what I say. He can go from one idea to the next almost instantaneously. The music is very challenging. It's very difficult to play. But what I love about it is you'll get these couple seconds of kind of intentional confusion, and then all of a sudden the most beautiful major chord pops through. And so what he's trying to do is play with your expectations about harmony, about counterpoint, about form, because sometimes the form of this piece will take the place of, like, a verse could be 2 seconds long, and then another little kind of verse or a chorus might be a second and a half. And he's constantly playing with these things so that eventually you have to pay attention in the most intense way. You can't just sit there and go, okay, I kind of know that melody now. You are on the edge of your seat for 8 minutes.
I was thinking that one of the things you want to do in orchestral music these days is to get people to the end of the concert or end of a whole piece and think, what was that? But it sounds like you've got Andrew Norman doing that within Unstuck. Saying,
yes.
What was that?
Yes, exactly. And one of the greatest things that I love to do is to say, okay, a concert is something that not only perhaps reaffirms or confirms what you love about music, but it opens up your mind to things that you never even dreamed of before. And that's, I mean, how many experiences do we have as human beings where that's the case, where you really encountered something where you said, oh my gosh, I never even considered that, and I might never even would consider that until I had this experience. That's what we're trying to provide.
Teddy Abrams is the music director and conductor at the Brit Festival Orchestra and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. The first concert on Friday evening, that is called the West Coast Composer Celebration. There are 6 concerts behind that strung across 3 weekends. You can join the conversation on the Exchange if you'd like to visit with Teddy and talk about the season coming up. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I didn't mention about Andrew Norman's Unstuck that the percussion section seems like it stays quite busy through that.
Oh, yeah.
I picked one of the milder things for, you know, a morning on a Monday.
Oh, yeah. The percussion has an amazing part in this. And also, so do the strings. They're asked to use many techniques that are unusual. And actually, one of the great things about it is all of these composers that we're playing, many of whom are alive on the first program, are all from the West Coast or all live here now. And they all have entirely different styles. So Andrew Norman's may be the kind of most, as I said, frenetic or kind of intense. But then you have composers like John Adams, who's not only a very, very famous, well-known West Coast composer, but somebody who's integrated romantic sounds and minimalist sounds with his own unique style. And then we have something that I'm so excited about, the world premiere that I mentioned, called The Song of Sasquatch, which is by organ composer Kenji Bunch, and we commissioned this piece. And we asked Kenji, who's really one of the most, I think, exciting, interesting composers in the world right now, we said, we want you to write a piece about the West Coast. Choose any subject matter. And I assumed he'd write something about maybe the forests or, you know, a road trip or, I don't know, something classic.
Hot Springs.
Something that, you know, maybe one of the towns, but it ended up being about Sasquatch, which... we don't even know what it's going to sound like. I mean, the first rehearsal is tomorrow. This is very cool.
It'll be tall and it won't smell very good, though. Right?
That's right, yeah. And, you know, we did some research into Sasquatch lore. We want to be up on this because, you know, we want to present this in a very, intellectualized fashion. So we, found this pretty interesting subject matter around this, and I love it. Super creative.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. So that's The Song of Sasquatch, and you also have works by Mason Bates, Darius Milhaud, Henry Cowell, and John Williams even appears in the program.
That's right. Well, he's a West Coast composer, for sure.
And then on Saturday, you have a program called Voyage of Discovery.
Yes, Sibelius and Brahms. So we're going right back into some of the core of the Romantic repertoire. And of course, Brahms is one of those composers who... it somehow captured something so essentially human and vulnerable, and I think that's why musicians love playing it, because there's a level of depth that you almost never find with any other composers. This music grows with you your entire life. Brahms is something that musicians start playing at a very early age, and at least, you know, now I'm 30 years old, so there are some Brahms pieces I've been playing since I was probably 5 years old. And it changes with every single year. It never gets old, never gets tired. It just grows just like life itself.
And tell us a bit about the violinist for the piece.
So Noah is really a spectacular musician. We've never had him.
Noah Bendix-Bogley?
Exactly. Yeah, you got it. Yeah. And Noah is an American musician that has a unique position. He is the concertmaster of the Berlin Philharmonic, which there are not many Americans in, just to begin with. And the fact that he is the first violinist of the Berlin Phil is a big deal. The Berlin Philharmonic is widely regarded to be one of those orchestras that just kind of sits in its own category. It's so extraordinary to watch it. It's like watching this kind of living organism when they play. Every musician moves around it. So if you ever have a chance to see the Berlin Phil, just do it. It doesn't matter what else you've got that evening. Just do it. And he's the lead violinist of that group and an unbelievable talent.
And so here's an early recording of Noah Bendix-Balgley playing this very piece, the Brahms Violin Concerto in D major. How much time do you get to spend with the soloists, the visiting solos, in addition to the time you get to spend with your own orchestra?
Well, usually we just meet for a little bit before the first rehearsal that he's playing at, and then we go. We start rehearsing with the orchestra, and they're just, you know, there's a big difference between the way a band might prepare one of their concerts and an orchestra. You know, a band, if they're building a new album, let's say, they could spend months figuring out each song and really composing it together and choosing which guitar lick they're going to do and figuring out the drum fills. And then they might tour that entire album around for a year, two years, I mean, in some cases, 40 years, whatever it is. What we're doing is very different because most of the information about the music is, of course, already decided by the composer. So we're not making decisions about where to do drum fills, usually, although in some cases, you know, I've been known to add things. But usually we're not doing that. So we're starting with not only a tremendous amount of information from the composer, but also a tremendous amount of experience from the musicians and the orchestra. I mean, I've already conducted the Brahms Violin Concerto numerous times. I don't even know how many times I've done this. And most of the players in the orchestra have probably played this piece on 20-plus separate occasions. So they're coming with a tremendous amount of compiled information and knowledge about this music, which is how we're able to put it on so quickly.
And so you move on to a second weekend with Symphonic Exploration on August 4th with yeah. Schubert, Beethoven, Monteverdi, Rossi, Bach, Byrd, and Mozart. So some fairly standard names in there. Eastern Inspiration, though, on August 5th. Tell us a bit about that program.
So the main piece on this program is Mahler's Song of the Earth. And that is really one of the great works in the entire orchestral repertoire. You may remember last year we played Mahler's Second Symphony, and that piece is just the way I described it is it's like life itself. And Mahler was interested in creating entire worlds in his music making, and this is a great example of how Mahler is able to literally create universes, and he's taking elements of Eastern philosophy and integrating it in the most spectacular way.
And so I haven't mentioned in a couple of minutes. I just get into talking with you and forget to mention your name. It's Teddy Abrams is the music director at the Brit Orchestra. Stravinsky on the same program. So you got the Song of the Earth preceded by the Song of the Nightingale.
Yes, which is based on a Chinese folktale. And, of course, then Bright Shang's Shanghai Overture is from a recent work that he just composed. Also based on all, in this case, Eastern and specifically Chinese either folklore or fairy tales or philosophy. And so that's what this entire kind of program is built around. But the Mahler is something that if you're not familiar with his music, you absolutely have to see this live. Because watching and experiencing any Mahler work, they're all big pieces, by the way. So Mahler was this remarkable kind of conductor, composer, performer who had this vision for music that nobody else really had. He saw the creation of music as this kind of monumental force. Even when it wasn't dramatic like an opera, he was able to bring that same scale and scope into the orchestral world. And I often say, if you haven't heard a Mahler piece before and you look at a big one like the Song of the Earth or maybe, you know, the Mahler, what, Second or Sixth Symphony, you're gonna look and think, oh my gosh, this is a big piece. It's an hour plus. And I say, you know what? The experience of listening to this music and watching it is very much like almost going to a fantasy film, like going to see Lord of the Rings, where you're tracking characters and emotions that have a musical component to it. And that's what it's like to watch Mahler. It is as if you are hearing film because it's so dramatic.
I think it was the Mahler Third that had that exact effect on me at the Brit many years ago.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Wow, this is like every movie theme I've ever heard, or at least a hint of it in there. And it's like everything done in the movie is built upon what Mahler did.
Yes, it is. And the music is essentially three-dimensional because of how he composes it, you get a sense of space that you can actually feel yourself almost exploring a terrain or a landscape, and you have the ability to roam around there. I know this sounds way up in the clouds, but I'm serious. If you experience this music, that is the kind of sensation that you have. And there are many composers that have created works that I couldn't really live without, or I'd want to share with the whole world because I just think they're essential. But Mahler's nine symphonies, Das Lied von der Erde that we're playing, the Song of the Earth, and the couple other major pieces that he wrote are all in that category.
We have just about a minute left, and I want to ask one final thing, which is about the assembly of an actual program of pieces, whether you're thinking in terms of appetizers and main courses and even palate cleansers.
Yes. Well, you try and balance every single thing out, and, you know, even the best steak in the world, you know, you don't want necessarily to eat seven of them in a single meal. I mean, I know there are those restaurants that see if you can do it, but that's not right. The ultimate musical experience for me is one where somebody leaves our season and goes, oh my gosh, the world of music is so vast and extraordinary and so spectacular, and an orchestra can translate all of that, can bring it all to me. And that's what I want. That's my ideal kind of experience for any person that sees the Brit Orchestra.
Big stuff coming to the Brit Hill in Jacksonville Friday, Saturday, this weekend, the 28th and 29th of July. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the weekend of August 4th, 5th, 6th, and then Saturday, Sunday, August 12th and 13th. And Teddy Abrams will be in front of this all, holding the baton and letting you know in advance what the pieces are. Always a pleasure to visit with you, Teddy Abrams. Thanks so much for coming on the Jefferson Exchange once again.
Thank you for having me.